So what do you want to talk about today? All that's on my mind is politics, politics, politics.
Yeah, I'm trying not to think about politics, politics, politics. You know, I don't really know. I didn't really think of anything. I didn't have a chance much yesterday to think about anything.
Well, my thoughts were, I got three things. One, we could talk about what's wrong with the nation and how we're going to fix everything. That'd be number one. what you and I actually think, like, we would talk very specifically about issues. Number two would be talking about, so what are we doing with the Heath Post? And number three would be, I could just tell you all about what's going on in the NFL 71.
The Love Review, Love Review. The Love Supreme review was great.
Oh, good. Thank
you. I just hadn't had a chance to comment on them yet this week, but that was really good.
Well, good. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Now I'm ready for you to come back to part three at some point in your life.
Yeah.
And add to the review. But
yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. I love that album.
You've been a big fan of that album for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I have. You know, Spike Lee introduced me to that album.
Really?
Yeah. It was, he did a movie called Mo' Better Blues.
Sure.
And in that movie, Denzel Washington he's listening to that album or has a poster of the album cover or something like that in his apartment. In the movie, Denzel Washington plays a jazz trumpeter. And anyway.
It's a great album cover.
I didn't know anything about jazz music at all. You know, not any names, not anything. And that kind of, just seeing that movie, I just enjoyed that movie so much. And so it kind of made me, I was kind of ready for some kind of different music at that point, you know, to just kind of discover some other music.
Sure.
And so.
Well, you're getting older, more mature. You're wanting to explore jazz, you know.
Natalie Merchant had left the 10,000 Maniacs.
Yeah, life was. There was definitely a time in my life when I just said, it's like I woke up one day. I think we were at a music store one day.
Mm-hmm.
Or not a maybe like Barnes & Noble or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know, I should probably listen to some jazz.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anything about jazz.
Yeah.
And I talked to some people and they recommended a few albums here and there. And no different than seeing a poster in a movie. You know, you're just kind of taking a whim on what people recommend. So
just something different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I liked it a good bit for a while.
Same here.
Yeah. I got into some and, I mean, pretty much just sort of the major, you know, the major names. Just that.
Miles Davis, Dave Brubeck.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All that kind of stuff. And there's a reason why all that stuff is really popular.
You got that right.
You know, it's all fantastic.
Really good.
The only kind of like a little bit off the beaten path person I got into is, have you ever heard of a fellow named Ahmad Jamal?
No.
So he's a piano player. I think he's from Pittsburgh, and I guess he's still around and playing. He was, well, I don't, you know, gosh, because I recently saw him, and as I say that, I'm thinking, well, that's been 20
years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I can't really say that I've recently seen him, but anyway, I really enjoyed him.
Well, he has a website still.
Yeah, he's probably still out there. He
just came out with a new album.
There you go.
In June.
There you go.
So there you go.
I actually saw him live.
He's getting a 2017 Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh, okay, great. Good for him. Good for him.
So he must not be too far off the beaten path.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he absolutely not. No, I mean, pretty much. I think that if you really...
Like if you're into jazz, right?
If you're into jazz at all, certainly you've heard of him. I suspect that he's as big a name in, to be topical here, I'm sure he's as big a name in jazz as like Tom Petty was in pop music, which is quite huge, you know. But yeah. Maybe if you were from a different country, maybe if you were, you know, 30 years too old or 32 years young for any of that, maybe you wouldn't have heard of Tom Petty, you know. So,
although yeah. if you tune into any like 80s rock station on Pandora or anything, you get inundated with Tom Petty.
So. Yeah, you get Tom Petty once an hour. yeah, exactly.
I don't guess I realized Tom Petty was that old. I don't know why. I hadn't connected him being that old. But then, you know, Springsteen's, 68 this year? And Sting, I think, is 65 this mm-hmm. year, 66, something like that. They were mm-hmm. just talking about this on Kornheiser, right? So I guess it shouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't read really anything about his illness or anything like that. I mean, I know he had a heart attack, but I guess some of what I heard today was that maybe he knew he was sick or something. Based on like things that he said at his most recent shows and stuff like that.
I hadn't read anything. So I hadn't had a chance to read the news today yet.
Yeah.
So,
well, neither you nor I ever was into Tom Petty, but you know,
No, not really.
Although there were songs of his. I mean, I really liked.
I like that song you did with Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
I always liked that song.
I liked some of his stuff, some of the big songs later in his career, kind of like.
Free Falling.
I liked Free Falling a lot. I still like that song. And I actually liked the Traveling Wilburys stuff. That was probably when I started to pay attention to him at all. And he had already been around, you know. So,
I remember him on MTV, you know, in the mm-hmm. sure. 80s with
horrible videos.
Oh yeah, just awful.
Horrible videos. Yeah. Just painful to watch.
Yeah.
For us anyway.
No, yeah, that's why I remember this.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't care for him at all. I recall.
But yeah, it's interesting because I got to thinking, well, you know, David Bowie's obviously on a different plane, and so is Prince. But, you know, these are big-named artists. I mean, Tom Petty, David Bowie, uh-huh. Prince, from our growing up, you know,
yeah.
from when we were teenagers even. And so, I don't know, it's interesting.
Yeah. See that whole crew, you know.
Yeah, they're aging out.
Aging out. Mm-hmm. When he came out with, when we were in college and he did the Traveling Wilburys stuff with Roy Orbison and George Harrison and Bob Dylan and Jeff Lynne, that was the first time that I like sort of started giving him any credence, you know, like it's just nothing had appealed to me at all that he had been involved with that I'd heard. And then it turned out that, you know, well, there's actually some of those older songs that I like too now, you know, after having heard them, after giving them a chance. But I really liked the hits of the Traveling Wilburys stuff. And you know who that really turned me on to more so than even Tom Petty was Jeff Lynne and ELO.
I was going to say, Jeff Lynne.
Jeff Lynne and ELO. And now, you know, I mean, truthfully, I listen to ELO probably. If I listen to like music of any age at all, I listen to ELO almost as much as anybody.
Yeah, they're really good.
They're really good. And I didn't care for them at all no, that's not true. When we were like really little, like in elementary school, like Telephone Line was my favorite song I'd ever heard.
I love this. I just realized I made a major error on the Heath Post back in April 27th of 2011.
Did you say that Jeff Lynne was dead?
No, I did a review of a Tom Petty album.
Yeah.
And I called Full Moon Fever. It was part of that best of the 80s series.
Sure.
And the title to the post is Full Moon Fever by Jeff Lynne.
Oh. Did he produce it or something?
Yeah, he was the producer. Yeah. I'm going to change that right now.
I heard, there you go. I heard, I heard Paul McCartney talking about Jeff Lynne one time, and I thought this was really nice, which I probably like to read Paul McCartney interviews more than I like to actually listen to Paul McCartney music. But he was talking about when he first heard ELO and stuff by Jeff Lynne, you know, he kind of did the same thing that everybody at the time did, which was like, oh, they're doing us, you know, they're doing the Beatles. And then he said, but then as I listened to it, I realized, yeah, there's obviously, I mean, obviously he liked that Beatles stuff, but he's really doing, you know, he's talking about, no, he really did something different. You know, it's his own niche. And,
yeah, I never thought ELO, I mean, I understand it, but mm-hmm. I always thought they were much a ripoff of the Beach Boys as they were of the Beatles. I mean, to me, they were a ripoff of all that stuff. Not all the pop stuff of the 60s, not the acid rock or that stuff, but the pop stuff of the 60s, I thought they ripped off. But,
you know, I went
ELO's ELO. I mean, they're their own sound.
They're
distinctively ELO.
Yeah, they are their own sound. They, I went back and listened to some of their really early stuff, and it's very, very much, it's almost like Moody Blues art rock, you know. And
That's interesting.
Yeah. That's probably who I think they're most like is the Moody Blues. But you know, a certain era of that kind of like late '60s, the beginning of the Moody Blues, late '60s, early '70s. That's who they most remind me of. But that's kind of so. I mean, they really are. That's their own thing. I mean, they are their own thing, and that is a neat sound. And now you hear, you know, like at the time, they got dated. It felt like very quickly. Like by the time we were in high school, they were, you know.
Oh yeah, no,
very old news. Yeah, in the same way that Queen was very old news, you know.
Yeah.
And then to come back at them as an adult, it's like, oh wow, you know, I really have not heard anyone else do that kind of thing. Sort of in the same way that Queen is too. It's like, wow, nobody else was playing that sort of music and had that giant voice at the front. And anyway, you know,
it's interesting. You know, I was just looking at their discography on Wikipedia, and you know, they never had a number one song, which kind of surprises me.
Mm-hmm. I'm
not sure why, but I guess I would.
Well, what would it be? I mean, what would you have guessed of it? Like Easy Woman or?
I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, like Evil Woman or.
Evil Woman or. And Telephone Lines felt like a pretty big hit.
Yeah. But they had. So Don't Bring Me Down went to number four. That's. Telephone Line was number seven, went to number seven. Shine a Little Love, which I don't even know, went to number eight. Xanadu?
Yeah.
Did you know they did that song?
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. I mean, I don't know, it's interesting.
ELO.
Yeah, Tom Petty to ELO to...
Yeah.
ELO in some ways makes me think of, this will sound weird, but they make me think in some ways of ABC, although ELO had a lot longer run than ABC. But ABC had that odd sound that was so 80s new wave.
Yeah.
That you know it's 80s new wave, but nothing else sounds like it.
Yeah.
It's its own weird version of 80s new wave.
Right.
And it's held up well.
Yeah.
Like you go back and you listen to it now and you're like, you know, that is just so different. And
right. It really didn't get repeated.
Right. Nobody's copied it. Yeah.
Not in any sort of like, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that have done it, but not in any sort of popular way that I would
have
heard.
Well, it's amazing in some ways if you think about it. There's this whole push of electronica, right? There's been this whole push of, well, this was 10 years ago. There was a whole revival of disco. Nobody made anything that sounded like ELO during all that time. And it's kind of weird to me, like that somebody didn't go back and say, well, why don't we rip off these guys?
Yeah. Right.
Maybe they just couldn't. I don't know.
Or maybe it just doesn't really work that way, you know? But
yeah,
Mr. Blue Sky. I would have guessed Mr. Blue Sky might have gone to number one. That was a huge song.
It's listed. What did they say?
Yeah, I'm looking at the same. I went and looked at the list too.
Didn't they have
Can't Get Out of My Head seemed like a huge song too.
Oh, that's a great song.
Mr. Blue Sky only went to 35 in the United States. Don't bring me down with the number four. Oh yeah, you said that.
I don't know. It's interesting. I still like the album Time, and I still pull it out every so often and play it, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. When you think about music of, do you listen to like? So you don't have anything like Spotify or Rhapsody or anything like that that you're using,
I don't.
Right?
No, I listen to records and radio and YouTube mostly.
One of the things that those do is they sort of put you in the space where you can say, "We know I really feel like listening to like ELO right now."
Yeah,
and so then that'll lead you to say, "Well, who would I listen to?" At the, like, if I were going to make a playlist of music around ELO.
Yeah, right.
Like, who else would I listen to?
Right.
Right. So I'll end up making like a, like one of the things I liked about the old Rhapsody app on my phone was that you could create, like, you could throw stuff into a queue.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just listen to that. And nothing else would get thrown in there unless you specifically threw it in the queue. But you didn't have to make a playlist, and it would stay the queue, you know, until you touched it. And I used to play around with that all the time, like with that, where I'd say, okay, I want to listen to some ELO. Well, that's going to make me want to listen to Breakfast in America.
Right? Oh, okay. Right? Yeah. Right.
So I get some Supertramp in there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, well, you know, maybe I'll listen to, like, I'll throw something off Paradise Theater, you know, Sticks.
Right.
I don't know. It's.
Yeah, for me, like that run would take me to like, what's the big Steve Miller Band album that came out in the mid 70s that was, that sounds sort of, it's got Fly Like an Eagle on it. In fact, the album may be called Fly Like an Eagle. But that's the only Steve Miller Band thing that I much care about. But there's something about ELO kind of occupies. That one Steve Miller Band record occupies sort of the same space for me as ELO does. For the time, it's futuristic. You know,
yeah, Fly Like an Eagle. That was 76.
Yeah. And that album really sounds, you know, sort of futuristic in the way that, I don't know, like Close Encounters of the Third Kind is futuristic. And then it sounds so it sounded so dated so quickly.
That must have been one you got introduced to from your brothers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the when I think of Steve Miller, the first thing that comes to my head is Abracadabra.
Oh, okay.
That album.
Right. Right. I can. Yeah. That's not me. No, Steve Miller
or,
Band.
Or Eye in the Sky, you know, something like that.
Oh, yeah. Is that Steve Miller or is it Alan Parsons?
Oh, you're right. That's Alan Parsons. Sorry.
Yeah. Boy, that's an easy mistake, though. Yeah,
you got that right.
Steve Miller Band and the Alan Parsons. It's so easy to cross those strings. Yeah, no, Steve Miller Band. Steve Miller Band actually hits all three of the Wailer Brothers because it gets like Living in the USA, and Living in the USA is like for my oldest brother. And then he didn't like the Fly Like an Eagle era, which is my, you know, next brother. And then Abracadabra and that stuff comes up for me. Now, I didn't care for that either, but it's certainly more my age. But I like that second run the best. I also like the Living in the USA stuff. So
I work with a woman who I remember one day. So every year we do this big meeting with everybody. And we set up a PA system and stuff for it. And I always throw music on while we're setting it up. Because the first thing I do is get the speakers up, and then I throw music on.
Yeah.
And so I asked her, I said, well, who's your favorite artist? And she said, Steve Miller Band. So
Really?
Yeah.
That's the first person I've ever heard of that would identify Steve Miller Band.
I said, well, what Steve Miller, like, what album would you listen to? And yeah, she said The Joker. So,
okay. That's the next album, I think.
So that's what we threw on. But
yeah.
It came out, actually, The Joker came out in 73. I'm looking at his discography right now. And seeing that's what made me remember that story. But yeah.
So doesn't the Joker then predate Fly Like an Eagle? Didn't Fly Like an Eagle 75 or
76. So it's three years earlier. Yeah. Which is, you know what's odd looking at his discography? Is I wonder why there's a big gap. Because he's one of those classic.
Churn it out.
Yeah. Well, you look at any of those early 70s artists, they're doing an album a year.
Album a year, sure.
I mean, that's what they're doing. And
yeah.
So, yeah, he does. He comes out with an album a year from 68 to 73.
Yeah.
And then there's a 3-year pause. So it's kind of interesting, but.
Maybe he got really into the World Football League. He was working on a big World Football League rock.
He just wanted to follow the A's and the Dolphins.
That's right.
And not worry about anything else. And then 75 hit, and he's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll start writing again.
Yeah.
Could be. You never know.
I was trying to think of, there was a song the other day that I've always thought was a Steve Miller Band song. Then I found out, no.
Probably Alan Parsons.
No, it turned out to be Joe Walsh.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, like, I go through these things of throwing songs onto playlists and stuff like that. I've never picked a Steve Miller song.
Sure.
I would never pick a Joe Walsh song. I'm just not a fan. And I like, there is a, I forget her name now off the top of my head, but there is an artist who did a cover of Eye in the Sky that I really like.
Oh, really?
And I would listen to that, but I don't think I would ever go get the Alan Parsons version. But the other day I got on a Jim Croce kick.
Oh, really? Now that surprises me that you got into Jim Croce.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to Jim Croce. I'm a big Jim Croce fan, so.
Are you?
You didn't know that?
No!
Oh, my God, yeah.
This is the biggest shock of my day.
You didn't know?
No.
I love
Jim Croce. No, I didn't know you liked Jim Croce. I freaking love Jim Croce.
He's great.
He's fantastic.
Well, for me, you can throw out all the songs like Don't Mess Around with Jim, but the other stuff is great. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't even throw that stuff out. It has its, you know, it's fine.
It's just
There's songs like that for Springsteen, too. You know,
sure.
That
yeah.
They kind of are like over-the-top things and that sort of thing. But they have their place. But, oh, my gosh, like Operator. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. No, he had so many songs.
Photographs of Memories? Yeah, absolutely. I'd probably the story about I remember coming home. I don't know if it was from school. Or like being in the neighborhood, playing in the neighborhood. But I remember walking up to the front porch of our house. And like my brother Kurt was sitting out there with mom on the front porch. Kurt actually might have been crying. But anyway, they had just heard that Jim Croce had been killed.
Right.
Yeah, that was a big deal. Sam, well, I mean, all of them, both of them are still, they're all family. Still really into Jim Croce. You know, Jim Croce is one of those guys that time and, you know, and I really think about it from that era, like mom liked Time in a Bottle, you know, and she could understand why Sam and Kurt and Carolyn liked Jim Croce because of Time in a Bottle. And they didn't have a lot of bridge artists like that at the time, you know,
because my parents are big Jim Croce fans.
Yeah, pop music had become so different than what mom wanted pop music to be that there were just very, very few that they could unite on at all. But Jim Croce was one. So that was a huge, huge deal. Simon and Garfunkel being another. But
New York's Not My Home. That's a great song, too.
Oh, my word. That's a great song. You know, my daughter's first first favorite song was the one about the stock car driver. What's that thing called? Rapid Roy, the stock car.
Yeah,
that was her first favorite song. I mean, like, first favorite song that wasn't like, you know, Heads, Shoulders, Knees and Toes or whatever. But I'd play that thing in the car, and man, she would just love it, bobbing her head around to that thing.
That's funny. You know, I did a, it's fun. Yeah, I think in high school I did like a mixtape all around Photographs and Memories.
Golly, how did you
and
know?
I remember for myself, of course. And I don't know why. I got to thinking about that recently. I was trying to think of all the different songs that I had put on there.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, in fact, one of the songs I had on there was a George Thorogood song.
See, I don't know anything about George Thorogood other than that giant song.
Well, that's, I bought that album simply because
Bad
of that.
Song.
Yeah, I bought that album because of that song.
Yeah, right.
And love that song when I was in high school or whatever.
Sure.
But it had one song on there I really liked. I can't think of the name of it now. But that's a good, it was better than I thought it would be when I bought it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now, have you ever been a Harry Chapin fan?
No, I can't stand Harry Chapin.
Oh, okay. See, I thought, I kind of like
that's
thought.
That's you and Go Heath.
What's that?
That's you and Go Heath.
Yeah.
The Harry Chapin guys.
Yeah, I love Harry Chapin too. To me, Harry Chapin and Jim Croce are just like same, different sides of the same coin. Yeah.
Totally different to me. I don't know why.
Yeah.
They're just.
I get it. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's just music. You know, everybody has different feelings about it. It doesn't have to make sense. But you know, like you're George Thorogood, you know, maybe, you know, for me, an artist like that or an act that's like that is the band Asia.
The heat of the moment.
Heat of the moment. That to this day, and it's not, I mean, it's totally earnest. I have never quit loving Asia and not in any sort of.
Did you have their albums?
Yes.
I had no idea that you had their albums.
I had a poster of that stupid big, the dragon coming out of the water or whatever it was.
Really?
I had that poster in my room. Yes. I thought Asia was like, that's what music was going to be. I mean, I just did. I just thought they
were. Wow. I had no idea that you were a big Asia fan.
Yeah. That was like, weird. Yeah, that was huge. And to this day, I mean, it really does. It when I hear Heat of the Moment, and what was the other one that was so big when we were in middle school?
So well, what Asia, the first album came out, the one you're talking about, came out in 82.
Mm-hmm.
And that had, let's see the track, Heat of the Moment.
Only
Time Will Tell. Right?
Only Time Will Tell.
Soul Survivor, that was on that too.
That Only Time Will Tell.
Now, wasn't that one of the guys from Emerson, Lake and Palmer in that or something?
I think it was them and like maybe one guy from Yes. It was a super group. It was like them and one of the guys from Yes or something like that. And yeah, you're right. It was something like that.
Oh,
but
you're right. Okay.
But I'm not kidding you. When I hear Only
John Wetton's in there. He's from King Crimson.
Okay.
Steve Howe of Yes, Jeff Downs of Yes. And Carl Palmer of Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Of Emerson, Lake and Palmer. So, when I hear Only Time Will Tell, I get a little misty eyed. I do every time. That song just transports me. I'll tell you exactly where it transports me is like those bus trips, up to St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
You know,
That's that time period, sure.
Yes.
Well, I think what's classic to me about Asia, like in retrospect, looking back on them now, is it's like you take all these guys from all these progressive rock bands, and they come together and they say, we want to make a pop album.
Yeah.
Right? And this is essentially what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Which is cool, you know.
It is cool.
To me, and I've written about this a ton on the Heath Post, you know, to me, the whole point of music is to make hits, is to, you know, is to make, I mean.
Songs that people like to hear.
I mean, you know, obviously something like a Love Supreme doesn't fit into that, and I understand that. But like, if you're a rock band, at some point you want to make a song that people actually want to listen to on the radio. It would seem to me, but so I always thought that was interesting. Like, you know, looking back on it now, that a band like that would come together, and that's essentially what they did. You know, they made a an album of a bunch of singles.
Yep. I just wonder if, like, okay, if, like, say, you know, what's the guy's name? Steve Howell from Yes. I think he was the main writer for Asia. But I wonder if somebody like him, if he was not at all, like, confined by his own sense of, like, well, this is who I am, you know, his own, and I'm just using him as a total example. I don't know anything, but anyway, if he was not constrained by his own sense of, like, okay, this is who I am, or this is what, you know, my fans or my audience is expecting. And if he wasn't constrained by, like, what his record company demanded of him, you know, to continue to fill a particular niche that is dependable. What I wonder is like, if any of these people that really become skilled with music, really know how to play instruments and play different instruments. They all can play 40 instruments. I mean, they learn how to do everything. And what I wonder is like, with total freedom, if they would come out with, you know, a Madonna hit, you know, a Love Supreme, and, you know, some Garth Brooks song. I mean, like, if they would all do, you know, each
I
one.
I know exactly what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? Are each of those songs in each of us? And so,
well, I think
open ourselves.
I've written about this a little bit around a couple of different people. One is Liz Phair, who, and this is where I think you're onto something here, in the sense that, like, I do think artists and bands in particular get trapped around who they are, right?
Sure.
This is who you are. This is who you're supposed to be. Some bands are able to at some point break out of it, like U2. You know, U2 is able to completely redo their sound at some point. And become a completely different band.
To some extent,
And I think, but it's rare, you know, that people that people can say, well, no, we want to actually change the sound, you know, and do something completely different and have their fans embrace it or find new fans. And
well, take Eddie Vedder, right? It turns out that Eddie Vedder, he just really likes ukulele music. You know, and when you get that, like, if you apparently, I mean, just from reading your review and some other stuff, you know, if you were thinking that it was going to be like sort of a Pearl Jam song with some ukulele, no, it's an album of ukulele music. Well, he likes it. You know, and so, that's what I wonder about. I think about, like, Robert Plant. You know, Robert Plant's having this whole, like, bluegrass thing.
And, well, Plant has pretty much said, like, no, I'm done. You know, that was a different life. That was a different person. That was a different thing.
Billy Joel's gone back and forth. You know, like, he's, at one point he said he wasn't going to do any more music with lyrics. That was singing at all. You know, that would have a vocal. You know, so anyway, I wonder about that myself, but
no, that's interesting. I do think about that a lot. And I think for some artists, they can, it is their failure. Like, they can't get past it. And so they either keep trying to do what worked for them, or they try to change, but nobody will accept it. I mean, well, Taylor Swift went through this recently. She made this complete change and lost a lot of fans. You know, made a lot of new fans. So, I don't know. It's interesting. Music's such a great thing. You know, it's such a, I was talking, we've got a nephew who is going to Berkeley in Boston. And he went there initially to, his instrument was saxophone, and he was going to do, he wanted to be a teacher, a music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point along the line, he decided to change his instrument to voice, which is a huge shift.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to reapply and everything, and to songwriting.
Yeah.
Because he decided he actually wants to make music. Like, he wants to be a performer. And he and I were talking, and the thing, you know, I was thinking about and talking to him is, like, he has such a short window. You know, because most artists, the vast majority of artists who are doing especially pop music hit in their early 20s.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
That's usually when they do their best stuff. That's usually when they find their audience.
Let's say like 26 or 24 is the optimal.
24 age. Seems to be like the ultimate point. And it just dawned on me. I'm like, wow, you know, he's got such a small window of time to make this happen. Yeah, you know, you've only got like 3 or 4 years. And then at that point, you probably got to make a choice, right? Either I need to figure out a way to make a career doing this, like as a studio musician or a songwriter or something like that, and I can keep performing, obviously, on my own, but I'm never going to be a big artist, you know, or you can just quit.
Yeah. Right. Right. And maybe have it as a hobby.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which apparently a lot of people do. They just quit.
Yeah.
You know, I work with somebody whose husband actually had a major label contract at one point in his life, his band. Hmm. And the first album did okay. They had one song that did really well. They got to travel all around the world and tour. Their second album didn't do so well, wasn't very well accepted. Their third album was essentially done because that was the obligation they had. And at that point, they were done.
Yeah.
You know, most of the guys in the band were ready to get out of college and get a real life and didn't really want to do music anymore. And, you know.
Well, you know, that's Bill Withers. I think this is true. His first album cover, I forget what the name of that album, it's just come out in 1971. That's why I'm surprised I don't remember the name of the album. But anyway, the picture of the album cover is from him at his regular job. He was working for something else, and he maintained, like, he didn't quite trust it, you know, that he was going to stick. And so, like, he maintained his job for a while, and to some degree it limited his ability to go and, you know, obviously.
That's a great album cover, by the way.
Yeah.
That is brilliant.
Yeah. And he kept that job for a while, wasn't he? Maybe you're looking at it right now. I think he worked for some computer company or something.
It's hard to tell what he's standing there holding what looks like a lunchbox.
Yeah.
Leaning against a brick wall.
Yeah.
In like jeans and a t-shirt. It's a great picture.
Yeah. Well, it's authentic. You know, it's like, it was not. As I understand it, it was not photographed for the cover. It was the, you know, it was like, who knows why they took the picture. And then he used it for the, you know, he got to be able to use it.
But that's the thing, too, about guys like Bill Withers in the 70s. I mean, okay, he could have an album. He could have a number one single.
Mm-hmm.
He could have two number one singles. He could have a second album that also produces a number one single. And that could be it for him. And he could literally have made no money.
Yes. Right. You know?
I mean, that's the thing I think that's so hard to comprehend is that and that's one reason why they were chunking out so many albums. You know, they were under so much pressure from their labels, you know, just keep producing singles for us, you know?
Yeah.
And, so I wonder how many people did like that too. You know, where the people who we know had a very, you know, who had a hit career, like they had hit songs and they were successful.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that, they had to go just get a job.
Go get a job. Sure. You know? Yeah. Well,
that's like,
they're a worse fate.
Somebody, I remember somebody who, you remember the song Skyrockets in Flight?
Yeah. Yeah, I know the story. In fact, I thought you were going to go ahead and tell it. Go ahead.
They, you know, they were working a job and came to discover that one of the members of that band was like one of the administrative assistants.
One of the administrative assistants, right. Exactly.
It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid and that song was such a big hit song, I would have thought, man, these guys are like, you know.
Oh, rich beyond, you know, rich forever and ever.
Yeah. Well, you know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of that Simpsons episode with the yo-yo.
I don't remember the yo-yo people.
Oh, you don't remember that one?
No.
They have like a, they're going to have a thing at school.
Oh, Sparkle?
Yeah.
Yeah. The new Sparkle, right, or whatever. Yeah.
It's an old picture of an old Sparkle and they just shove them all. They just shove them all in a van. You know, Bart, I think Bart's the one saying, these guys must be millionaires, you know.
Yeah. Do you remember the television program, the kids' TV program, News Zoo Review?
Vaguely.
Yeah. I go to church with a woman now who, she was a youth minister at a church in, I think in Las Vegas. It was either Las Vegas or Salt Lake City. I can't remember which. Probably Las Vegas. But in any event, like one of her youth volunteers, like adult volunteers, was one of the News and Review women on that show. And like they did, you know, like they kind of, she kind of knew all about that. And like it was when they were making the show, you know, like she was involved also with this like church youth group and that sort of thing. You know, it's kind of funny. But all right. Well,
yeah, I would have thought all those people were living in a giant mansion somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, we didn't talk about politics at all.
That was good. Music's a good escape always.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
So, obviously this week we'll do Tom Petty.
You did a good job with the REM songs for the last one.
They're the only two document songs they had.
Yeah. Well, that was fine. So, that worked out great.
So, all right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'll talk to you later.
See you later.